outside right now?
Not yet. We'll do introduction to the event real quick so people know how to use the thing. And so we'll give you just a few minutes to take a deep breath and get ready. I'll let you know when your slides are up. But Janet, if you do this, I'll email everyone. Cool.
Okay, so I want to welcome everybody to Polar Connect with Glenn Clark, somewhere in the Southern Ocean. We're excited that you finally made it on and that all of the North America was an hour off. That's what happens when you have a time change on the weekend. We can't quite get it all together. Today is March 11th, 2014, and before I turn this over to Glenn, we got a few slides and about Polar Trek and how to use this platform that we're going to share with you. This next slide just shows you a little bit of a background of the Blackboard Collaborate, and the slides should be changing for you. If you're joining us by voice over IP and not by telephone today, when you want to talk later on, you click on the talk button once to open up your mic, and then you click it once to close it again when you're done talking.
If you have questions, I'm not going to get feedback from Mr. Clark. I will.
If you have questions as we go along, you can click on the little hand icon above the list of participants or type your questions in the chat area. This event will be archived, and we'll share it with you online as well as send it out to everybody that's registered when we're done in the next couple of days. There are, as Sarah mentioned, lots of people that have joined this event, and instead of going around the room and having everybody introduce themselves, we'd like you to share in the chat area where you're from, if you've got students with you, how many are there, and just let us know about who's there, and we can relay that to Glenn and the team at a later date. The next slide is about Polar Trek, so if you're following along and can't see it on the screen and need a PDF, we just wanted to let you know why Glenn is down in the Southern Ocean working with the research team. He's part of a program called Teachers and Researchers Exploring and Collaborating. It's a professional development experience where it brings teachers and scientists together so that teachers can learn more about what is happening in science and bring that back into their classroom. Our program is polar focused, so our teachers from around the United States are matched up with scientists that go to the Arctic and the Antarctic. And as you'll hear from Glenn, he'll talk more about what he's doing with his particular scientists. But we have a number of expeditions that are starting to head out this spring and over the summer that will be Arctic focused. So we're about to switch from Antarctic to the Arctic. Just one quick slide about questions. Again, during the presentation, you can type your question in the chat box and let us know. We will relay that to Glenn. Glenn cannot see the chat that is going on. He's just called in by satellite phone, and we will have to relay questions to him. And at the end of the presentation, we'll try to have some live questions, and we'll tell you how to do that.
And Glenn, this is Sarah. Your school is typing a lot right now saying hi, and they're saying at PHCS, there's Nicole, Dylan, Julia, Jenna, Kelsey, Shauna, Jen in the nurse's office, Mel is there. So they all wanted to say hi real quick so you know who is out here. And Miranda in the classroom.
Great. Well, tell them I said hi. Thanks.
Yeah, they can hear your voice.
Okay.
And then satellite, though, it makes it, I think it's
far away.
So, yeah, so we are on your first slide, and I need you to talk very direct to your phone because there is a little bit of a delay and a little bit of an echo, and just cue me on to your next slide. So we're at your opening. Welcome to the Taunton Cruise.
Hey, thanks very much. I appreciate you guys waiting along. It's been some delay here. We're in pretty bad weather right now, but we're in the 54th parallel right now, and it's called the Screaming or the Furious 50s for a reason. So we got some pretty heavy seas. But anyway, I'm glad you're here, and I hope you can hear everything okay. So the trip started on the 29th, and we'll be set to be back in port on the 16th of which is Sunday the 16th at 8 a.m. So how about the next slide right now?
Okay.
Okay. We left from Hobart, Tasmania, which is just small island just off the south coast of Australia. And originally, if you can look in the picture on the far right, you see a map. If we basically went due south towards the Mertz Glacier system, and then we kind of worked our way west along the coast to the Totten Glacier systems. Those are both completely uncharted areas. So as you can see, if you can make out the squiggles, we spent a lot of time in both of those areas. And right now we are taking a beeline back from the Totten Glacier back to Tasmania. The seas were fairly good, but today got really, really bad, and we're rocking and rolling right now. But it's been a lot of fun. So how about we go to the next one?
Okay.
The first thing we did actually before we actually left, we were met by the governor of Tasmania. Hobart's now become the new gateway to East Antarctica, since it's so close. So it was really nice that we got to meet him, and he gave us a good send off, and it was nice. Like, so I'd show a picture of that. How about the next slide? So the whole concept, this is an interdisciplinary research project. We're doing reconnaissance in the Sabrina Coast. Three different disciplines, which are geophysics, marine geology, and physical oceanography. I'll get to those in a minute. There are scientists from around the world, and there's several different institutions that are also on board also. It's all been funded by the National Science Foundation. And you can see in the upper right, there's a bunch of scientists working together to make the plan. The plan's been going on for several years in planning. So the other pictures are just pictures from the actual cruise. How about the next slide, please?
Okay.
Okay, the first discipline is geophysics, and it's basically we're studying the Earth, or scientists are studying their physical properties. Basically, it's the properties you can't see. They use several different special machines. One's called the seismic streamer. If you can see on the left, you see some gentlemen on the back of the bow of the ship, the stern of the ship, running a large machine off the back. And it basically shoots sound waves with an air gun to the, and it's bounced back and picked up by a wire, and then they are able to determine what the bottom of the ocean looks like. There's also several other ones, gravimeters and magnetometers, and it's a lot like going from one-dimensional to three-dimensional glasses. You just get much better view of the bottom. The whole time, if you can see on the bottom, it says marine mammals. Because we use sonars, they have to have a marine mammal observer at all times, making sure if we see any whales or seals, they have to shut it down. So nothing is harmed when it's happening. How about the next slide?
Okay.
The next discipline is marine geology, and basically we spent a lot of time, the area I spent most of my time with, where we would take a lot of different machines. As you can see in the upper right-hand corner, there's something called a jumbo piston corer. Basically, there's five or six devices that we use to mine the bottom of the ocean, depending on where it is, using several different devices to get sediment rock samples. But one of the cool things we used was, if you can see in the middle, it says the sea bottom from the yo-yo camera. We dropped this submersible camera down in, and it was it's called a yo-yo camera because it kind of goes up and down like a yo-yo. And they're able to kind of see what the bottom looks like. But one of the cool side things is the light that's down there is amazing. You might see the little gray arrow pointing to an octopus that's sliding away. So I don't know if you can see that. The other ones, you can see the rocks and all the work that we had to do to try to separate them. How about the next slide?
All set.
Okay, the next one, the last one is physical geography, and this is where we and the scientists used several different devices. One's called a Rosette CDC, which you can see on the right, bottom right. It's a big machine with a whole bunch of bottles in it that will collect water samples at determine specific depths. They send a sensor down at certain depths to pick up types of water at that level, and then they'll bring it up and do a whole list of specific tests on it. We do moorings, if you can see in the center on the bottom, where that device is actually dropped to the bottom and it's left for a year. Next year, the Australis, which is a large Australian strip, is going to come back and pick it up. Actually, I think that one's actually in the ice right now. But, and the one on the upper left is called the UCTD, which is kind of a portable one that's just kind of shot out. They call that a fish that the guy's holding, and they're able to determine the temperature, the currents, and the salinity, oxygen, and a couple other things, which are real important. It's basically they're trying to figure out the characteristics of that certain part of the ocean, just like we do determine weather patterns in certain parts of the world. And if you look at the bottom left, that shows you an incredible shrinking cup. We took a bunch of those from my school and a bunch of other schools from Australia and all over the place and dropped them with the CDC, and they shrunk to the size that you see there. How about the next slide?
Go ahead.
Okay, this is just a quick picture of the ship. That's our home away from home for the last 43 days. We got 3 days left. It started in 1992. It was commissioned. I did a quick thing yesterday on my blog about the engine room. It's a pretty impressive thing. It's basically like a floating city. It's got 8, 10 huge, massive engines in it, all diesel engines. It's about 308 feet long. It can be deployed for as many as 75 days. So we have plenty of fuel and plenty of food to go anywhere we want. And it is a research vessel, so in a minute I'll show you all the labs that are available. It can accommodate 70 people. Right now we have about 60 on board. We have 460,000 gallons of fuel. Right now we're averaging about 5,900 gallons a day of diesel fuel just to keep the engines and the generators going. So we can actually, one interesting thing is we make all the water on board using waste heat. So it's a pretty efficient system, and all the sewage is treated with heat instead of chemicals, so there's no pollution going on. It's a pretty cool vessel, and we're going through some pretty heavy seas right now without any problems. How about the next slide, please?
All right, go ahead.
This just basically shows a quick idea about the size of Antarctica. We were working somewhere near Florida. If you're looking in the lower left-hand diagram right there, where you can see the star just above it in the map of Antarctica, that's about where we're working. So if you're in the United States somewhere, you can kind of figure out where you are in relationship to us. And then the one on the right basically shows that if we were to take all the ice and remove it from Antarctica, it's actually has some very large mountains of plus 10,000 feet. So it's a pretty amazing area. And in the South Pole itself is about 10,000 feet high. So it's a pretty massive area. So how about the next slide, please?
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. And this is an older slide, but four or five main reasons why people are concerned about the global warming in Antarctica. And it's as the temperature rises, there's obviously going to be less ice or less frozen ocean. Everybody loves penguins. One of the big things is their populations are changing in certain areas. As the Antarctica, as it gets warmer, plants starting to move in, which is in the past has not happened. Before we got on the ship, we were checked for any types of seeds that might be stuck on our clothes, a whole bunch of things like that, because they could easily be transmitted to Antarctica. So The main thing is, as the ice melts, so does the sea levels rise. So it's something to consider. So how about the next slide, please?
And we have a question coming into the chat box
sure.
from Andre. He's in Colorado. He's a new polar trek teacher. He's there with some students and wondering, how deep did those cups go?
Those cups went about, that one was around 1,200 meters. We didn't get into a lot of deep ice like they would do over in the peninsula section, I mean deep water. So the deeper they go, the smaller they get. So we had a lot of cups, like hundreds and hundreds. So they went about 1,200 meters or 1,200 yards approximately.
Very cool. Thank you. All right. We are on your slide that talks about penguins.
Okay. Well, I get more questions about penguins and what we eat than most of anything else. So I just thought I'd show you one of the reasons it's important to study down here is animals like penguins, which everybody loves, are definitely having a negative effect as the temperature rises. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So people say, why go all the way down there and study all that? Well, this is one good reason right here. So how about the next slide, please?
Okay.
Okay, one cool thing is there is a lot of wildlife around here. Might not be as cute as a penguin or as furry as a seal, but above and below and all through it, there's some beautiful animals. Maybe some aren't as beautiful like the one in the center, but they're all part of the food chain, and they all serve a vital role. There's a plankton specialist on board who did nothing but use a plankton net to gather and determine the volume and how much plankton is there, the health of it, and the varieties. And there's a lot of other reasons that they study plankton, too. It kind of gives us a little historical background of the geology, too, because of some of the plankton use make little shells around them. They're called diatoms. So there's a lot of great wildlife. These pictures were all taken on this trip, and I have thousands of pictures that I could show at some other time. But how about the next slide, please?
Well, you got a question about that creepy critter in the middle from your school. How large is the Holothrium? Sorry, I can't pronounce that one.
The Holothrium, it's probably about 16 inches long, approximately.
Ooh. Ew, that's big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
all right, now now we'll go to your
that's
next
why I
topic.
Showed it, I figured. Okay, next slide. I kind of fell in love with icebergs, I guess. I was to vote one of the best things would probably be the icebergs. It's kind of hard to put in perspective how cool and how massive these things are just with a picture, but you can learn a lot about them. The one on the left is relatively new because it's flat on top. The one upper right shows what's called calving, where it's starting to break apart, and that's what's happening on the ice sheets. The one in the lower left shows one that's flipped over, and it's frozen in the sea ice, so that's an older one. When they get to a certain, they start to melt unevenly, and then they'll flip over. And then the last on the bottom right just shows one that's slowly starting to melt and heading out to sea. So. They're all over the place, and they're really, really beautiful. How about the next slide, please?
Well, we got more questions.
Yep.
Somebody wants to know what that creepy critter is. No, what does it do? Chris, what is it, the Holothrium? Sorry.
The Holothrium is a bottom feeder invertebrate, and it feeds on basically, I call it, or detritus on the bottom. So it's kind of like a vacuum on the bottom of the ocean and feeds off anything that's died and gone to the bottom.
All right, that makes it even grosser. All right. In your school, they might be being funny, but they're asking about glaciers. Do they make a large crashing sound, especially if no one is here to hear it?
I did hear a couple smashing, and they were pretty loud, but they might be gone right now, but they do make a pretty big sound. And a very big splash, as a matter of fact.
All right. So now we're on to your slide about glaciers.
Okay. The glaciers are basically, they're really, really, really slow-moving masses. They're from the ice sheets. They're on the continent. the big concern and one of the reasons they're down here is they feel that there's water is warming in certain areas, so that's why they're testing with the CDTs. And it's starting to undermine these things and making it, there's no more friction, so they're able to easier to slide into the ocean. And when they get into the ocean, then there's going to be sea rise and a lot of loss of ice. So that's one of the concerns. But there still is an amazing amount of glaciers out there. How about the next slide, please?
Okay.
Okay, just a quick thing about the coast. As I said, we were a ship-based research project. Just a couple of pictures. We basically were on board the whole time. We actually didn't actually get off the ship, but we are in an area, as I said, that has never been charted or actually been by a ship. They've flown over it a couple of times in planes, but we were the first one, so when we saw, like, animals, they didn't really know what we were when they saw this big orange thing coming at them. But we never saw another ship or plane or obviously a human being the whole time. It's probably one of the most remote places on the planet. And the weather changed every day, but it could be as warm as 30 to as cold as minus 30. So how about the next slide, please?
All right, we're looking at working outside.
Right. I had a lot of questions about what it's like, and I use an old term, I think you guys got it from me. It's no bad weather, only bad clothing. In the upper left, you see it's called the mud room, where they issue cold weather gear and mud and float coats and everything. So everybody's very, very well dressed, even if you had a long shift outside. The biggest thing was the wind. The wind was... with you right now, it's about 60 knots right now, so it was tough at times when it was really windy, but you were actually able to get inside briefly, but you got used to it, and it was actually the best part of the work for me as far as I'm concerned, getting outside. That's the whole reason I was here. But how about the next slide, please?
And before we move forward, there's a question. Are the glaciers blue, or is that just a reflection of the sea?
No, that is blue, pure ice. They're that color. I mean, especially when the sun hits them, they're just incredible. It's the most blue. It's the bluest ice I've ever seen in my life. It's incredible. And the closer they are to the bottom, the bluer they get, and then below the surface of the ocean, you can see them also. So that's the color of the glaciers there. They are that blue.
And a question you could probably hold till the end after the whole presentation is a great one, again, from Colorado. What has been your favorite part of the trip so far? So if you want to think about that one or answer it now, you can.
Well, I'm going to say that the best days were banging through the sea ice right next to the coast with the glaciers and the icebergs, and then just all the penguins and the seals and the whales working through it. It was extremely loud being on a ship banging through the ice, and it's kind of like going through a, I don't know if you guys remember, a snow cone maker, just a constant grind, but you just could not get enough of the scenery, and it was so quiet, and besides the ship and pristine, it was just one. So it would probably be just traveling through the sea ice and with the wildlife. Does that help?
That's perfect. Thank you. All right, we're going to let you get through some slides here. Plenty of room for science is where we are.
Okay. As to research vessel, it's RVIV, Nathaniel V. Palmer. The RV stands for research vessel. IV stands for icebreaker. So basically a real tough boat with a whole bunch of stuff specifically made for science. It's done, I don't know how many dozen, possibly hundreds of projects of trips since 1992. As soon as we get back to Hobart, they got 3 days, and they're going right back out again. It's only one of two that are in the Antarctic. The other sister ship is the Gould, which basically works the peninsula over near Palmer Station off South America, Punta Arenas, but any type of science, biological, like oceanographic, marine geology, is on board, and there's facilities to store all your stuff. And as you can see in the bottom right, that's mission control, I call it, but that's actually the dry lab, where all the everything is monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then in the upper right, you got to always have somebody watching out for the mammals in case you're running seismic, which is making sonar so it doesn't disturb their echolocation or whatever, their behavior. How about the next slide, please?
All right, and a quick question from Mrs. Hurley's class. Have you touched a penguin?
No penguins, no. We haven't. We've been very, very close, but no touching of the penguins. Just a lot of great pictures. But.
Okay, now we're looking at the institutions involved.
Okay, yeah, I had some questions from a lot of people about what these are basically what you're looking at, some of the foremost universities and institutions in the world that are on board right now, as well as the companies and the institutions that fund it, such as the National Science Foundation. So people have asked where's the place to go to study. Just to list anywhere from in New York would be Colgate and Hamilton, and there's University of Tasmania, there's McCrary in Sydney, and University of South Florida, Texas A&M, and University of Texas. All of those are very big players on the board. So the UTIG is University of Texas. So just people that are interested in how to, like, where's a good place to go study, these are just some of the ones that are the foremost ones in the world that are on board right now. How about the next slide, please?
Okay.
I'm just going to kind of quickly go through the people. These are the scientists. They're from, we have five different countries involved, the U.S., Portugal, Chile, France, Australia. And these people are the best of the best, and they're like the A-team of Antarctic science. Ms. Leventer, Dr. Leventer on the bottom right was at our school. This is her 26th trip, but some of them have been as many as 40 trips down here so far. So it's a pretty impressive group of people, and they have a vast amount of knowledge. How about the next slide, please?
Okay.
This just kind of shows what they do. They don't just bark out orders. They lead by example. They're out there doing everything and doing all the work. They love it so much. And if you see on the left side, this picture in the middle, you can see a woman's really getting involved. It's Dr. Post climbing into a biological dredge trying to get some supplies out. So they enjoy being inside and outside, and they've never lost their love for what they're doing, and they're extremely, extremely knowledgeable as to what they're doing. How about the next slide, please?
Okay.
For those that are interested in looking in, there's eight graduate and undergraduate and PhD students on board. All the supplies and the sediment or the sampling that we get, a lot of that will be used for their PhD projects or for their graduate thesis. So they're getting a really good opportunity to work hands-on and with some of the finest people. And these kids are the best and the brightest that I think we have around in terms of this. I was kind of like the old guy, the non-typical student working with them, but I tried to keep up. So anyway, they also had a good time. You can see on the bottom right, they goof around just like everybody else. But how about the next slide, please?
Okay.
Okay, just a typical day on duty. We did basically two 12-hour shifts from noon to midnight or midnight till noon. Half of it was inside, half of it was outside. You can see in the upper right, we're putting together what's called a casting core. That was a cold day. It was about minus 20. So you had to put your gloves on and off quickly, but you can see the ice in the back, and that was a midnight shift one. But on the bottom left, you can see we're plotting the course as we travel, and then just observing mammals from the bridge. And in the bottom right, you can see some of the graduate students sampling the Casson Corridor, the sediment that we got from one of the sites. There's a lot to learn. You got to be able to do a lot at once. And you got to know your computers, which I struggled at, but they did a great job. But, it was very much a team thing and very hands-on, and it was it's a great opportunity if anybody's interested in it. How about the next slide, please?
Life on board.
Yeah, okay, we didn't work, even though we had long shifts and we were tired, there's plenty to do off-duty. I mean, we had tournaments, a beanbag patch tournament, if you see on the upper left, and it was a lot of fun. There's actually a little place to shoot hockey pucks, foosball, darts, people playing guitar. There's a great gym. In the bottom right, of course, in the upper right, you can see you got to do your laundry just like everybody else. That's called the morale phone on the right over there. It's a free call back to your family, and you get 15 minutes a day, so that's a plus, too. People are just relaxing, and then we have a really nice lounge with a big-screen TV and I don't know how many different videos. We don't have television, but we can watch a movie once in a while. And the bottom left, you see us making ice cream for the dry ice, which I now know why they had dry ice on the ship, so we can make ice cream. But how about the next slide, please?
All right, and Evan Price has a question from Living Environment. What was the coldest temperature, and have you hit the gym? How long are your work shifts?
Okay, coldest temperature, Celsius, air temperature, it was minus 25, and the coldest wind chill was about minus 45, I'm trying to calculate right now. It was pretty cold. They can do the math back at school in terms of what that is in terms of Fahrenheit, but it was pretty cold. Yes, I have hit the gym, and actually the last 4 days straight, so tell Mr. Price that I am. What was the third question you had?
How long are your work shifts?
The work shifts are from noon. It's a 12-hour shift, but it usually goes overboard at least another 2 hours. So there's nothing unusual to have a 16-hour day, especially when we were really doing hardcore science. Right now we're just in transit heading back to Tasmania, so there's a lot of just packing up and a lot of just crunching numbers and things like that, or talking to people on the phone like I'm doing right now. But so pretty busy days, but very rewarding.
All right, so we are on the safety at sea slide.
Yeah, just to let you know, even though, I mean, there's a lot to, we were very remote, we didn't have a helicopter on board. If you did get hurt, you were probably going to seriously hurt. You weren't going to be evacuated, so everybody had to have a full physical and stuff like that. But there is a hospital on board, there are a couple EMTs. We did lifeboat trainings almost weekly, man overboard trainings, fire drills, just like you do at school, all sorts of emergency gear, the gummy suit, goofy-looking thing you can see me in. The bottom left, you can see us inside the lifeboat practicing, and it's just basically like a big catch. They just drop it in the water. But bottom right, you can see the float coat you have to wear by the time you go outside. So upper and in the center and the front is kind of a broken slide. I don't know what that is, but it's the communications, and there's a lot of distress things all over the ship in case the ship starts to go down. They go off automatically, but we've had no problems yet. Everything is very safe. How about the next slide, please?
Okay, it's about the captains, the mates, and the ABs.
Okay, just going to quickly go through. It's not just scientists and students. That the crew on board is made up of a large number. The first group is the captain and his mates. All have many, many, many years of ice experience down here, different ages, but they all have degrees, marine merchant degrees, four-year degrees. The folks below them on the ABs, it stands for able-bodied seamen, and they basically every shift, there's an able-bodied seaman, there's a chief mate or a captain, and then in the next slide, you see the other ones. But you can see a picture of the bridge and all the things that they need in order to run the ship. Everything's computerized and very high-tech, but it's, these guys work really hard, especially the AB. They'll do anything from run the cranes to help with the fire, putting out a fire whenever we haven't had one, but they're trained to do everything. How about the next slide, please?
Okay.
And then you have a large bunch of support or technicians. The Marine Techs, they are the ones that are outside every day, 12 hours a day in really cold temperatures. They're from all over. They do tough work, but most of them have degrees from all over the place. They just love sailing, as they say. We have electrical technicians in case there's any problems, and they're working constantly on all the machines. We have a lab tech that supplies everything. As you can see in the upper right, one guy's in charge of, he's called the Marine Project Coordinator, and he oversees the coordination between the scientists and the crew. And then you have the ITs, which I said earlier, they run the show because they help with the computers, which they can do a lot of work. But you can see just a couple of pictures of a typical day and what these guys do. How about the next slide, please?
All right, go ahead.
Okay, the last group of folks are the engineers and the oilers, and then jokingly they keep the lights burning and the screws turning. And I just did a blog yesterday about it. Below the deck on this ship is absolutely incredible. There's 10 massive engines and so many moving parts and shops and all this stuff. And if you can see, there's just one, that's one wing of one of the props. There's two double props in the back of the ship, and they're several tons each. So it's a 24-hour day job, and they're all experienced. They do a great job. What I'm trying to also get at is if people are interested in this type of thing, you don't necessarily always have to be scientists. There's plenty of jobs out there that can give you a chance to see the science, but also to work on a ship and to sail. So these guys love what they're doing. So, how about the next slide, please?
Okay, we're on the chefs.
Okay, we're almost done. There's a lot of questions about the food. The food is as good, or it's definitely it's as good as home food. We're running a little low on fresh food, right? Fresh vegetables and stuff right now, but the food is still plentiful. And four meals a day, mid-rat stands for mid-ration. It has nothing to do with a rodent. That's because we work double shifts, but... the food is really good, and it's very plentiful. Most people gain a couple pounds on the ship, so the diagram. How about the next slide, please?
Go ahead.
Okay, this is just to show a picture of all of us that it's kind of a ceremonial thing where if you can actually sail across the Antarctic Circle, you become what's called a shellback. Originally, you were a polywog, so I guess it's a... an honor that a lot of people don't actually get to sail across the Antarctic Circle, so we had kind of a little fun ceremony, and I just thought it was kind of an interesting slide, so I had a lot of fun that day. How about the next slide, please?
Okay, we're on the next slide, and folks, just so you know, we have a few slides left, and then we will be able to open it up for questions for a minute. Go ahead, Glenn, we are on technology.
Yeah, just as you know, all the work we do, as you can see, it never got to minus 75. I sent this out earlier. That would be like a different planet. So, but it was just kind of a funny thing I saw. So, a lot of technology, and it was taken care of. How about the next slide, please?
All right.
Okay, we're pretty much at the end. I just thought this was a good slide. Is that all there is? And we can't forget Antarctica. It's the most amazing place I've ever been, and I hope people start to learn a little bit more, not only about Antarctica, but about the Arctic, because it's pretty important in terms of what's going on. So I just want to thank everybody that gave me slides. I'm on the next slide now, please. Excuse me.
Sure.
A lot of people help with the pictures. You can see that. But I just want to say thanks to everybody on the Palmer and the NSF and you folks at Polar Trek. But I want to say a special thanks to Dr. Lavender for giving me a great opportunity, because I'm never going to forget this. So the last slide, if you want to click onto it, and this is it, is question time. Does anybody have any questions? I'm available, and I don't know how much time we have. I'm trying to keep track here, but...
Oh, you're fine. You got plenty of time. All right. So if you do have questions, what you can do is type them into the chat box, as you have been, and we can relay them. Or if you'd like, you can raise your hand. There's a little hand icon above the list of participants. We will know then it's time to call on you. And then you would use the talk button, press talk to speak, and Glenn would hear you. And then you press it again when you're done. So while people are getting ready, thinking of questions, there was one from Carol, so a Polar Trek teacher. And she is wondering if the ship is run by the Coast Guard like the Healy is. And this is Carol Scott.
No. Oh, great. The ship is actually owned by Edison Schwest, which is a company out of Louisiana. And it's chartered by Lockheed Martin. And everything is funded by National Science Foundation. But it's actually a privately owned ship. And the folks that work for them are called the ECOs, which stands for Edison Schwest Offshore. So it's not run by the Coast Guard. It's a privately owned, but basically it's leased out mainly to the U.S. government and other governments through Lockheed Martin and funded by National Science Foundation. That help?
Perfect. Yeah, Carol says thanks. All right, Don has his hand up, Don C. So Don, just press the talk button to ask your question and hit it again when you are done.
This is Kayla from Ms. Hurley's class. We're wondering if you're getting seasick.
Actually, I'm not getting seasick. There's a lot of people that are taking Dramamine and Bonine, and they have patches, and they're not doing that well, but I'm feeling fine. Today is pretty wild, but I'm not seasick. I'm doing just fine, but thanks for asking.
Good question. And it looks like Miranda Brosell, you can press your talk button and then press it again when you're done.
Hi, this is Clark Falcon. I was just wondering.
Hey, Glenn, we're looking for
how many species of penguins there are up there.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
How many species of penguins?
Actually, there's only two species that
how many species
are inhabiting Antarctica. And two different species. The big ones are called the emperors, and the smaller ones are called the adelies. The adelies are much more, there's much more of those we've seen. And those are actually the only two species that inhabit Antarctica. The other ones are kind of on islands just off Antarctica. So it's the adelie and the emperor, if that helps. Okay?
Perfect. Thanks. And there is a group signed on called Parrishville Hopkinton, and they have a question. Press the talk button when you're ready, and then talk, and then press it again when you're done.
Glenn, you said the food was good. Have you gained weight?
No, about the same, actually. But no, there's plenty of food to eat. Let's just put it that way. I don't know. I haven't really weighed myself, but thanks for the question on that one, though.
Oh, and we're chuckling. We're laughing. Evan Price, he typed in, okay. Do you miss the ninth graders?
Oh, yeah, we're getting into the silly questions here, aren't we? Who wouldn't miss those kids? Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I do miss them. Tell them we'll be back. They better get there. I tell them I can see them in the back of the room misbehaving, so. Straighten up. So, I'll be back soon.
Nice. Okay, and Don C. has another question. Go ahead, Don.
Lindsay and Mr. Charlie's class, are you retired?
I didn't hear it.
Okay, go nice and loud, ladies.
Hi, Glenn, it's Krista. We're just wondering if you're tired from the time zone change.
Yeah, it's actually 4, right now it's 4:30 here, a.m., so trying to get back into a regular routine, but the shifts are long and it's a lot of work, but I'm sure I'll be fine and be ready for school next week. But a little tired, yeah.
All right, we have another question from Miranda. Go ahead, Miranda.
Hey, Mr. O'Clark, this is Caleb. I was wondering what's the most favorite animal you've seen so far.
Ooh, I'm going to have to say the killer whales we saw one day when we were working. There's about 10 or 20 of them. I can't remember the number. And they were just all over the place, just following the sea ice. But there was penguins all over. I love penguins and all that. But just seeing those was a pretty good treat. They're a pretty big animal. Not as big as the humpbacks that we saw also, but there was a lot more orcas or killer whales. So I would say they were my favorite animal. Next to that ugly one you might have saw in the slide previously. That was a pretty nice one, too. But hope that helps.
Actually, Janet put that slide up, so we're staring at that icky creature right now. And how about a question from Parrishville Hopkinton?
Okay.
Hi, Glenn. Have you been sleeping well enough? Are you tired when you're finished your shift?
Usually it takes a couple hours, and then once I hit my top bunk, I'm out like a light. I usually read an hour or so and then just go fall right asleep. So I have no problem falling asleep, that's for sure. Actually, the deepest sleep I've had in years. So it's also the first time I've been in an upper bunk since I was 8 years old, so maybe that's what it is. How's that?
All right, and we have a question in the chat, and then we'll go back to asking. Dominique is a new Polar Trek teacher. She's from the L.A. area. Do you ever get a chance to go outside every day? Are there times the weather is too rough to go outside?
We definitely go outside every day possible. Sometimes they'll close the decks. Like today, they close the decks. Because we're in a Category 1 hurricane. But typically you can get outside and take pictures when you're not working. There's several different decks. There's the stern, there's the bow. And last night actually was an incredible night where everybody was on the top deck of the fifth floor. It was the most incredible southern lights of the Aurora Australia that stretched all the way across the sky, right over the top of the ship with the Southern Cross right in the middle of it. So it was kind of like a big party on top of the ship last night. And unfortunately, the weather changed today, but we definitely get outside and enjoy as much time outside as possible. One of the reasons you're down here, I guess. I hope that helps.
She says, that sounds amazing. Thanks for answering. And she is headed to Antarctica on a ship U.S. winter. And there's a question from Miranda, and we'll wrap it up in a few minutes. So any more questions,
okay,
people can raise their hand. Go ahead, Miranda.
Hi, Mr. Clark. Hi, it's Amy Stickles. I saw the pictures of your Menke whales, and I was wondering how many species of whales have you seen?
Three different whales. I've seen orcas, humpbacks, and minkes, but the Marine Mammal Observer also saw what's called a fay whale, which is S-E-I. I didn't see that. So right now we've got four different types of whales that we've seen so far. We're in the open ocean right now, so we're not going to be seeing any. They like to hang near the ice, at least That's what we found. But those are the three that I saw. Okay?
Okay. We have a question from Parrishville Hopkinton. Go ahead, Parrishville. Press the talk button down to speak. Press it again when you're done.
Hello?
Hello?
All right.
Hello?
Well,
this
ahead.
Is Michael Byrne.
Hello.
I was just wondering if you were planning on hijacking a penguin on the way back.
Maybe they'll swim with us. I'm going to say no to that. But how about I'll give you a stuffed penguin when I get back. No, we can't take any animals with us. Kind of a law against that. Thanks for that. Thanks for the question, Mike.
All right. This is our last question from Don C. Go ahead, Don's group.
We were wondering what your favorite thing to do on the boat was.
Okay, I didn't quite hear that. I don't know if somebody could just repeat it for me.
Sure. What was the most fun thing you do on the boat, right? Was that it?
Actually, if it was inside, it would probably be the tournaments that we have up in the helicopter here, or probably working the ice in the sunshine, or hanging out on the top of the ship watching aurora, listening to music. It's just
cool. All right, one last question from, I believe this is your substitute, Evan Price. Would you stay longer? All right, I think that beep we just heard was actually we lost Glenn. So you probably heard that his phone was kind of cutting out a little bit and sounding a little strange. That was him on the satellite phone, and they may have lost reception. So good timing, though, because we are going to wrap it up. Thanks so much for joining us. Teachers that are online, you can participate in Polar Trek by following expeditions like Glenn's, participating in these events, and we have many other opportunities. So thanks to everybody, and keep watching for more events coming up for Polar Connect. The archive will be available shortly, and we'll send the link to everyone who registered. Thanks so much for sticking with us, and have a great rest of your day.